Hello, WATD and Friends with Benefit listeners. My name is Joe Coletti, and I'm one of the four hosts who brings our listeners important healthcare information, news, and updates. My show started 19 months ago discussing healthcare and how telehealth would change how hospitals will provide care today and tomorrow. Now, here we are on the front lines fighting the battle against COVID-19. I've been able to interview some incredible healthcare workers all over the country, from Seattle, Washington, Arizona, Tallahassee, Florida, and our latest interview aired last month in Virginia with the boys from Valley Health. Tonight, we have a great show planned for you. We will be speaking with Phoebe Putney Health System in Albany, Georgia. Phoebe Putney Health System is a not-for-profit network of more than 4,500 physicians, nurses, professional staff, and volunteers delivering high-quality healthcare to more than 500,000 residents in a 41-county region. Phoebe Putney Health System is a recognized leader in specialties including cardiovascular medicine, oncology, orthopedics, and women's health, and offer patients the most advanced diagnostic and therapeutic treatments available. Phoebe has received multiple awards and accreditations in treating breast cancer, lung cancer, and stroke, as well as hip and knee replacement surgery. This health organization is one of the hottest COVID spots in Georgia and country. I was on their website reading the history page for Phoebe, and it said in 1910, Judge Francis Flagg Putney donated $25,000 to the Ladies Hospital Aid Society of Albany to establish a hospital to serve the citizens of Southwest Georgia. The judge's endowment came with three stipulations. One, that the hospital be named after his mother, Phoebe Putney, which was done. The hospital serves all citizens of the community, regardless of race or ability to pay. That was number two. And three, that the hospital be a brick building in order to withstand the greatest threat to structures at that time, mainly fires. Tonight's guest will be Phoebe Health's VP of Operations, Will Peterson. Will is from Birmingham, Alabama, and now living in Americus, Georgia. And also with us is our favorite voice in healthcare, our show sponsor, Michelle Hager from Blue Saris Consulting. Michelle, are you with us? Are you there?
Absolutely. Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me tonight. I appreciate it. Looking forward to hearing Will and hearing the stories of Phoebe Putney. We've all heard them on the major cable news networks, and we're honored to have Will and tell the story of Phoebe Putney tonight. So thanks for having us.
Yeah, so let me get us started off with Will Peterson. Will, welcome to the show. How are you holding up in Albany, Georgia?
Hi, Joe. Doing well. Adapting to a new normal. As you indicated before, you know, our COVID realities began in early March, and we, for the next 2 months, were battling this virus at unprecedented pace. And fortunately, the months of June and July have slowed somewhat. Unfortunately, the reality that much of the country is now experiencing, we were experiencing 2 or 3 months ago. So our well wishes definitely go out to those areas because we understand what they're going through. However, to begin with, the interpretation of this virus was, and the expectation was, that heat going to be a good combatant towards the virus. And if anyone knows anything about Southwest Georgia, we're probably one of the hottest, most humid areas in the entire continental United States. And unfortunately, that prediction has not held up to be correct, as we are starting to see significant rises in COVID over the last week and a half here in Georgia. So unfortunately, we're not sure if we're battling a second wave or a second version of the first wave, but we're still not where we were 2 to 3 months ago. So we're all appreciative of that. But other than that, like I said, living the new normal, and just glad to be here.
Right. it sounds like you're learning as you go. And one of the quotes I read on your website from your CEO, Scott Steiner, he said, we went through 6 months of supplies in just over 7 days back in March. Yeah. What was that like, Will?
Well, as you can imagine, Joe, with any line of business, whether it be healthcare or not, you know, to exhaust 6 months of inventory, of 6 months of supplies, 6 months of assets within a week is just so unprecedented that one can't even realistically really wrap their head around. There's really not a predictive modeling concept that exists that, you know, plans and prepares an organization to say, you know, be ready, you know, in the next week, you're going to go through 6 months of supplies. And I've shared with people to try to draw it into a more realistic interpretation. I said, you know, imagine if you were to get in your automobile and there was a 100-mile destination that you were going to embark upon. And along the way of that destination, every 25 miles, you were being required to put a new set of tires on your car. Mm-hmm. You know, it's such an unrealistic expectation of who we are and what we are as an industry, to which we were not prepared. So when Scott stood up and Brian Church, our CFO, stood up to our disaster preparedness committee and said, guys, we're running out of supplies, you know, the first thing that crosses people's minds is that, well, golly, you know, we're running out of linen, we're running out of aspirin, you know, we're running out of some of the more basic supplies, when the reality of it is the supplies we were running short of were a lot of our protective equipment. So our gloves, our gowns, our face mask, you know, things of this nature to protect our employees, you know, from the interaction and the encounter with our COVID patients. And so it's one thing to run out of supplies in some other industries, but to run out of supplies in a healthcare setting, you know, in the midst of combating a pandemic, not just the patients that are being put at risk, but also your workforce. And fortunately for us, you know, employees started to become patients. And if we were not able to, you know, minimize that trend, we could not have, you know, provided the care necessary to our community, because all of our employees would eventually become our patients.
That's such a good point. Employees became the patients, and that's what people are fighting all over the country. And I love the analogy of got to change your tires every 25 miles. That's just so it's unimaginable and so inefficient. Great examples.
Yeah, it was. So what went into treating infected COVID patients? You know, what did you do to keep the doctors and nurses safe?
So for us, our number one commitment, Joe, was, you know, the safety of our providers, you know, whether that be physicians, whether that be our nurses, but also, you know, let's not lose sight of the fact that, you know, our environmental service workers were having to come into these rooms and clean them. And you know, there's so many people that touch the plan of care of a patient. And so, you know, when we were treating these patients, some very, very good things that I compliment our organization quickly jumping to. And keep in mind, guys, there was no playbook. You know, unfortunately for Albany, Georgia, we have been the epicenter of natural disasters over the last 4 years. We've had two tornadoes come directly through our community, and the eye of Hurricane Michael, you know, took a diverted path and came inland and actually came right through Albany, Georgia. And so while we have been fairly, you know, very effective at responding to natural disasters, but the thing about natural disasters is A, you can see them, and B, you know, when they're gone, they're gone. And unfortunately with COVID, you know, A, we couldn't see it, and B, you know, no one really knew what we were combating. And so when we started treating our patients, one of the first things that we did was, we established, dedicated COVID treatment areas. So for a lot of people, you know, I think there was so much attention being thrown at COVID that they failed to realize there were other patients in the hospital. You know, people were here because of heart attacks. People were here because of newborn babies. People were here because of, you know, cancer treatments, things of that nature. And so one of the first things that we identified was that we have to segment and separate COVID patients from, you know, our other patients within our facility, because some of those patients have compromised immunity as part of their treatment, post-surgical procedures. And so fortunately for us, we had purchased a neighboring hospital a couple years ago, and that hospital was readily available and had the infrastructure to where we could transition our COVID patients over there. Immediately, we designated two units within our main hospital, shut them down, closed them off. COVID patients were admitted directly into that unit. And so we were able to really turn our attention towards our admission and our discharge processes for those areas specific to COVID, and as far as the protective equipment that we were able to provide those areas, you know, our buying and purchasing procurement department did an excellent job. And I don't mind saying this because it's been quoted in national news lines. We had to go to the black market. to buy a lot of our protective equipment. We could not go through our regular purchasing channels. And it wasn't because of price. It wasn't because of, negotiation squabbles. It was simply that the vendors did not have an ample supply. Just like us, they were not prepared. Okay. They were not prepared to, go to work on Friday with their storehouses and their shelves full, and then to come in on Monday and all of their inventory be evaporated. And so, we were buying from, resources out of Mexico and basically black market, suppliers in order to keep our employees protected.
Did you get concerned that purchasing equipment from the black market like that you would have a quality issue? Did you see that at all?
Well, we did not see it, and to be quite honest with you, we fortunately for us, I mean, we have the expertise and to evaluate, and it wasn't that we would just take what was offered to us. There was obviously a matrix of evaluation. But what we really found was it was the same product that was being that we could purchase domestically. It was just four times the rate,
right.
And we didn't bat an eye at that, and that's where I compliment our CFO and I compliment our senior leadership, and especially Scott Steiner, our CEO, was, price was not an option. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, there was definitely some parameter around that, but our senior leadership's number one commitment was the safety of our employees, even if we got to pay four times, market value to make that happen.
That's a good point.
That's good.
Yeah. My next question for you, Will, is, what were some of the recent protocols you had to develop over the last 3 months to help keep up with the demand of providing for your patients?
Yeah. So for us, it was, we were, I would say at our worst in terms of COVID. We had as many as 150 to 200 COVID patients in our hospital.
Will, you had 150 to 200 COVID patients in your hospital. And how large?
Correct.
How large is that hospital? How many beds?
If you look at our website, we're listed at roughly a 600 bed facility, but we operationalize anywhere from 425 beds. So. And that's everything from birthing beds to now our right. surgical units are, things of that nature, our medical units, where the predominance of these type of patients are housed. We were maximized. I mean, we were anyway, we were on constant critical care divert.
Yeah.
And so when we think about what protocols we developed over the last 3 months, two main things that we did to really stabilize, because for about a 4 week window, we were diverting and flying people out of this hospital almost as quick as they were coming in.
Wow.
And so I'll never forget the day looking out of my office, first time I've ever seen like this. I remember looking out of the window of my office, and where my office sits, I'm right across the block from our helipad. And so whenever a helicopter's coming in, for a transfer of a patient to another facility, I know it. And I'll never forget hearing the helicopter, and I saw it land, but I swore I could continue to hear it like it was over my office. And so I walked outside of my office and I looked up, and there were six helicopters in line, just
wow.
hovering, just waiting to come pick up a patient, go pick up a patient, go pick up a patient, and go. And a lot of that was us, patients were coming into our emergency room, we were stabilizing them, and then we were having to triage them and get them out to another facility. And luckily for us, Georgia Hospital Association, the state of Georgia did a great job in opening up beds in Atlanta and Macon, Augusta, you name it, to take these patients from us. A lot of local rural hospitals, were taking on patients. So, but for us, it was two main things in terms of protocols that we've developed. And one is obviously, our staffing models. One of the biggest issues we encountered early on was the lack of sufficient staffing. As all healthcare organizations can relate to, there's a nursing shortage nationwide, and so everybody's looking for staff continuously. Fortunately for Phoebe, we do not have astronomic turnover rates, so we do a good job retaining staff. It's just really locating staff to fill vacated positions, and so. We really beefed up our interim staffing model, and by beefed up, I mean we made a commitment to invest more And so we, at any given time, we have as many as 150 contract nurses on site right now. You know, to be here and be available and meet the needs of our, you know, potential influx in COVID patients. And the other part was really developing a secondary location to really treat, and I hate using the word house, but to house COVID patients. And some may look, you know, hear this and say, well, you know, why do you need to get them out of the hospital? Well, you know, one of the things that, you know, we were forced to do right in March and April when we were being hit the hardest was we had to shut down all of our elective procedures. So all of our elective surgeries and things of that were being canceled. But in addition to that, you know, there were follow-up visits for cancer patients that couldn't occur. I mean, there were women that were, you know, having mammograms to where, you know, a provider was calling them, say, we think we may have spotted some indication on your examination, but however, it'll be 2 months before we can see you. I mean, can you imagine the mental and emotional torment that was putting people through, or the fact that, you know, we just, you know, put you through a stress test and we need to bring you in and do a cardiovascular procedure, but we can't see you for 2 months. So stay on this blood thinner and, you know, do these things to try to, you know, minimize your risk until we can get you in. So there's so much that goes into, you know, a healthcare setting that people just do not appreciate, I think, you know, in terms of what really kind of makes the, you know, the wheels go round. And it's not just treating, you know, obviously those that are in need, but it's, you know, in a time like this for a pandemic, but I mean, you also, you know, you have to have those revenue streams coming in just to pay the light bill. And most importantly, meet your payroll. Because the minute we can't start keeping our employees paid, then you know we don't have the resources to treat you anyhow. So to be able to isolate and dedicate an off-site location to where those COVID patients are getting the care they need in an environment that they need, but it's not disrupting nor preventing the hospital from absolute shutdown, is substantial. And the third thing that I just want to emphasize and make sure that, you know, listeners have a good appreciation for is that we have invested and hear me when I say this, prior to COVID, Phoebe is a organization that has always made substantial investments into its workforce. Our health and wellness programs are unlike so many other healthcare organizations. I mean, we have such a multitude of resources available to us, but the one thing that we really invested in and over the last 3 months, we have continued to make additional investments is in our emotional well-being of our workforce. And so when you think about the emotional turmoil that that people go through, the anxiety, the depression, you know, these things were just, I mean, they were becoming real. And, you know, and we were asking people to work 7 hours a day, 12 hours. I mean, it was just wearing on people. And then lastly, but not least, is the emphasis towards telehealth. And so, you know, one of the things that falls within my scope of responsibilities here at Phoebe is I'm responsible for the strategic direction and pathways of telehealth here at Phoebe Putney. And, you know, for the last 3 years, telehealth has been part of our operational model, but I don't mind telling you, it's always taken a back seat.
Let's listen to that more, Will, right after this break. Yeah. We're talking to Phoebe Putney Health System, VP of Operations, Will Peterson. We'll be right back with Friends with Benefits.